So this is the answer. Now, you may have some, there are two other possibilities, but they're linked. One is a Kanishka who has some Madhyam tendency. Because it's not that you're Kanishka one day and the next day you wake up and now you're Madhyam, just like that. There's obviously a progression, a gradual progression. So a person initially is purely Kanishka, then gradually becomes more and more Madhyam, then fully Madhyam, and then more and more Uttama. So you may have a Kanishka Madhyam who may have many characteristics which are not very good. But still they may have a little Madhyam tendency, so they'll preach a little. One example that I heard, which I thought was very good, there was one devotee, but then he left. We use the term bloop. You know the term? Prabhupada said bloop means the sound that a rock, like a pebble makes, or a small rock, if you drop it into a bucket of water, it goes bloop. So that is what it's like when a devotee falls from Krishna consciousness into Maya. So there was this one devotee and he moved, unfortunately. So what was he doing? This was movement. He got into some bad habits again, unfortunately. So he would go to the public bars and drink. So he was there one day and one fellow walked in. And the fellow sat down next to him. And they started talking. And this other fellow said, oh, what have you been doing? And this little bit spiritual discussion around. A little bit. After all, what better to discuss over a pint of beer and religion? You'll come up with many bright ideas. So somehow, some little discussion arose. It wasn't very advanced, but it was something. And so this ex-devotee, fallen devotee, we should say, he said, well, actually, yes, I used to practice Krishna consciousness. And the other chap, he had some mild interest, so he asked, oh, what's it all about? So then a discussion got going. And a week later, the other chap joined the temple. So, here you have someone who's Kanishka, or even less, not really Kanishka, borderline, at best Kanishka. But because there's a little Madhyam spirit, then he manages to help someone by explaining a little bit about Krishna. Then you have someone, like take, well this was take Srila Prabhupada, who is Uttama, but he's preaching. Now Uttama doesn't mean oblivious, for example, to your spiritual master. So in the case of Prabhupada, his spiritual master told him, you preach. So Prabhupada didn't say, well, look, I'm just too busy being absorbed in this very elevated consciousness of seeing myself like this, unable to preach, and the others as not needing preaching. Prabhupada said yes. So then, without compromising his position as an Uttama, he accepted the attitudes of a Madhyam Adhikari. So now when a Madhyam Adhikari preaches, then many people become devotees. When a Kanishka, who's a little Madhyam, preaches, then someone may become a devotee. They may not also. But when an Uttama devotee preaches, accepts the attitudes of the Madhyam and preaches, then you see Krishna consciousness spread in a huge way. Because he's on that platform. And he has that connection with the Lord. So immense potency. So therefore we may struggle to keep ourselves Krishna conscious, but Prabhupada made millions of people Krishna conscious. So this is Uttama accepting the role of Madhyam, not coming down, but just accepting that role with the same incredible potency of the pure transcendental energy of the Lord. So, these are just some variations on the theme. But the Uttama who's not acting Madhyam, he won't really influence people to become Krishna conscious. So, if you go down to the bottom of page 2, say, halfway down the last paragraph. In other words, this partiality of the Madhyam is a natural feature of the Madhyam, the middle class devotee's nature. He'll naturally feel like that. And he'll naturally be selective. And the Lord, just consider how elevated is the position of the Madhyamadika. The Lord becomes subservient and allows his mercy. It's not that Krishna has no mercy. He is the reservoir of everything, including mercy. But he will let his mercy flow after that of the Madhyam devotee. So he gives the Madhyam devotee power of attorney, actually. In fact, to give his mercy. And if the Madhyam thinks, no, I won't give this person. So Krishna says, fine. No problem. Not that you have to. But if the Madhyam says, well, I'll give it to this person, Krishna says, fine, you give it. So that power of attorney. So in other words, the Madhyam Adhikari is very close to Krishna. It's not a small thing to be a qualified Madhyam Adhikari. So now, the cause of that mercy is that the devotee has bhakti. Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttama. It means that bhakti is developing more and more. So when bhakti is fairly substantially manifest, but not fully, then a natural characteristic of that bhakti is that the devotee just feels like giving it, feels like helping people. So that because the devotee has bhakti, the devotee is now giving it. And of course, without the devotee having bhakti, there's no possibility of other people getting bhakti from him or her. So bhakti is causing bhakti, actually. The bhakti in the heart of the Madhyam devotee is causing the other people to get bhakti. Do you follow that? Yeah? So therefore, bhakti is causeless. Material. But it's not that the devotee, Madhyam Adhikari, is like a robot just giving out bhakti. The devotee is thinking, shall I give it to this person or that? How shall I give it? Who shall I give it to? So bhakti is also, bhakti devi is also, as Krishna is doing, bhakti devi is also becoming subservient to the devotee, while simultaneously inspiring the devotee, but allowing the devotee to give her mercy according to how the devotee wants to. So I hope you followed all of that. It's very interesting. And if you think about it, you'll see that it actually makes a lot of sense. So now let us just consider a couple of...
Also, it is reversible, like in the sense that the devotee falls down.
Okay.
So that means the level of bhakti also.
Oh, yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a description that when a person gets bhakti, it actually means that bhakti devi enters the devotee's heart. It's not just an impersonal energy of devotion, emotion, but it means that bhakti devi is personally present. So, if we commit offences like tonight, you're going to hear about devotee relationships. And unfortunately, well, maybe I'll be able to get a separate. I may not, so unfortunately. So, I think they're going to act out a few devotee relationships which may be like improper, offensive. So, if you offend a devotee, or if you offend Krishna, or if you offend something to do with devotional service like your beads, you just drop them on the ground. Or anything to do with devotion, your books, if you let them fall on the ground, your Prabhupada's books, like this. Or if you abuse a devotee or don't do the duty you're meant to do, any of these things. So these are offenses to bhakti, personally, bhakti devi. It's not just an offense to some invisible, maybe invisible, but just some like intangible energy. It's an offense to the presiding deity of bhakti. So bhakti devi, who's within your heart, may withdraw to some degree. she may step out. And we're going to discuss this as we go on, actually. But the possibility exists of Bhakti Devi withdrawing her mercy and Krishna withdrawing whatever he may be giving in reciprocation.
I want to understand that the power of attorney is the Madhima Bhakta.
Yeah.
And maybe, at least if they're in the Madhima spirit, like, which is always all around the world trying to distribute Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
So they're in that spirit of giving Krishna consciousness to everyone, or even discriminately. But we see sometimes we may even share compassion or something with someone, but they don't accept the party, or they're not conscious. What is the reason? The Madhima is still giving, if they want it.
You may give, or the Madhyam chooses to give or not give. It's not that he is so intelligent that he automatically knows who will take, but he'll try. If someone looks like they might accept, he'll try. If someone is really anti, then the devotee won't try, generally. Or he may try in a tricky way, in an undercover way, he may try. But the thing is, they may accept or not. And that is essentially up to them. And there are other things. There are other things also. But in principle, you can say that it's up to them to accept or not. Yeah. So, and there are other parts. We'll come to that shortly.
As I understand it, the conclusion of the discussion is that Krishna himself does not distribute the message. But now what happens when Krishna is occupying the position of the devotee, I say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah. Then he's a Madhya Madhikari. He's effectively he's that. He may be whatever. He may be an Uttama, if he's an ordinary, like a Jiva. He may be God. But when he's acting as a Madhya, then he's acting as a Madhya. And effectively, this function is like that. Yeah. So Lord Chaitanya is God, and he's giving mercy. But he's not taking the position of God. He's taking the position of the devotee. And at least when he's doing his Sankirtan movement, he's taking the position of the Madhyamadhikari. So he is functioning like that. And if you tell him, no, you're God, he'll say, no, I'm not. Because effectively, he's actually accepting consciousness. Okay.
Could you explain a little bit about the spontaneous love of God?
We'll come to that. Step by step. We haven't come to shredding yet.
You're saying that you've already evolved.
Yeah.
It would be like Bhakti's taken. Yeah. But then what happens to the spiritual is that they have made some sort of
mercy.
Yeah. Is that
okay? So the seed remains. Generally, the seed remains. I don't know if you caught that. If someone falls down, does that mean that Bhakti Devi abandons them altogether?
No.
Not exactly. Not exactly. The seed remains. But even in that state, we're going to discuss tomorrow actually about this, if someone falls down. Then they may do the same chanting they used to do, and try, but they just can't get into it. They just can't get anything out of it. That chanting which they used to enjoy, it's a struggle. Because bhakti is not so much manifest, perhaps only in the seed form, due to offences. So let's just carry on. Now there is a category of thing, and if I can find it, I'll tell you where to look. Okay, so I'll just explain very briefly about this other point in this regard. Somewhere here, it talks about... Oh, here it is, page 3, second paragraph. That certain things... Certain types of karmas, this is at the bottom of the second paragraph, on page 3. Certain karmas, certain material activities, if they're performed in a certain way, nishkam, without real personal motivation, they may act as a door to bhakti. Now, what does this mean? A door. I'll give you the idea. I'll try to give you the idea. Take vegetarianism. Now, this is material piety. This is a very nice form of material piety. But because it's material, and therefore it falls into, say, category number one, that it will generate material good fortune in the future if you become vegetarian now. In the future, you will enjoy certain results as the karmic reactions to that pious activity of giving up meat eating. So, you're vegetarian. Now, you may hear that the Hare Krishna devotees are vegetarian. And you think, oh, very nice. The Hare Krishna devotees are vegetarian. They must be good people. So let me go and meet them. So then you go and meet them. And when you meet them, then you get the association of devotees and then the Majjhimadikari's influence and so on. So then you may become a devotee. So that vegetarianism, material piety, has acted as a door, although it hasn't caused the bhakti. Actually, the association that you got when you met the devotees, that caused the bhakti. But it acted as a door. And other things, you know, like abortion, anti-abortion. The devotees are anti-abortion, and there are many ordinary people who are anti-abortion. They hear, oh, the Hare Krishna devotees are anti-abortion, and they think, oh, good, let me go and associate with them. So then they may become devotees. You get the idea then? You all know Mother Acha Vigraha? Yeah? Very nice devotee. But I remember when she was becoming a devotee, she was vegetarian. She was a, what do you call it?
Vegan.
For 12 years. Means no dairy products. Strict vegetarian. No dairy products. So it's different from us. And, you know, very like rigid. Very rigid. So, after some time, she heard about Hare Krishna. And she heard, oh, the Hare Krishna devotees are vegetarians. So she thought, oh, that's nice. They must be nice people. Let me go and meet them. So she did. And I remember her coming to Mal District and gradually getting into it more and more. So it acted as a door. Now, what happened was, in her case, that she came up for the Sunday feast. And, of course, our Sunday feasts in Durban are not bad. I mean, they're very nice. I take that. Just take it out of the ether. Out of the ether altogether. It was not sick. So they're very nice. But in some temples where they're not so successful, you could say, and there are not so many hundreds of people coming. So they cook a smaller Sunday feast. So sometimes they cook more opulent Sunday feasts. And at Mullen's Drift, that was the case. It was deep-fried everything. And everything had cream and curd and sugar, everything. Well, anyway, it was something like that. So it was really, you know, quite an extravagant, rich feast. So here's Mother Acha Vigraha. The vegan. No dairy products. Just the bare minimum to survive and, you know, something like that. And here's the Sunday feast. And Mother Acha Vigraha thought, what? These people may be vegetarian, but I can't be vegetarian like this. This is crazy. So she actually, that initial sort of interest which was aroused became a little dampened. Anyway, we're going to talk about how these things may be doors, but at the same time, they may have their adverse effects at the same time. So, being a vegetarian does not mean that vegetarianism is not going to generate bhakti in and of itself. But it may be a door. It may also not be a door. Like in her case, she thought, well, these people are vegetarian, but this is ridiculous. So I'm not going to have anything more to do with these people. So it was both a door, But then it was also opposed to Krishna consciousness, more or less simultaneously. So anyway, these are some interesting considerations. Then, a few points about bhakti and how nice it is. Where's our... Can you wipe this off the board? Oh, we're getting into the blackboard. Okay, we'll just wind this up. We'll just conclude this chapter. He makes the points that bhakti is much easier than other processes like karma, jnana, and yoga. Now, you may not be so interested in karma, jnana, and yoga, but 400 years ago in India, they were very important subjects to the people. And in principle, they are very important anyway. So, karma basically means material activity, or in this context, materialistic religious activity. And jnana means speculative knowledge or a very disciplined, impersonal type of spiritual practice. And yoga means mysticism involving physical exercises, like hatha yoga is part of the mystical yoga process. So, bhakti is not dependent on, I mean not entirely dependent on, faith, even. Purity. I got these out of order. It's also not dependent on expertise in doing whatever is involved. So, some references. I'm just referring actually to some of our verses here. Let's just see which ones. Well, as far as purity of conditions, like cleanliness, well, at the bottom of page 4. Bottom of page 4. In chanting the name of the Lord, there's no restriction concerning place, time, purity, and so on. This is actually number 2. Number 2 should be number 1. I mean, in terms of how they're appearing. So what this means is, even if you're not so clean, this is purity, you're not very clean, but you can still be Krishna conscious. Doesn't mean that you should just be, you know, some sort of, as they say, dirty slob, and think you can just be Krishna conscious. But if it happens, and you are caught in a position and you're not clean, you can still be fully Krishna conscious. There are many examples of that. One very good one, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The day after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a devotee, preached to by Lord Chaitanya. The very next morning, Lord Chaitanya came to see him and wake him up. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was asleep, and Lord Chaitanya shook him, and he woke up. And Lord Chaitanya had some Jagannath Mahaprasad. He said, "Here, eat this." The devotees would say that about Jayananda. Have you heard of Jayananda, the devotee in America? He died about 20 years ago. He would do that. He'd be very busy working on the Rathayatra cart till midnight. And he'd just get fired up, find some maha, and go and wake the devotees up. They just wake up and he'd say, "Here, take this." So Lord Chaitanya did the same thing. He woke up Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma just sort of didn't know what was going on, and Lord Chaitanya said, "Here, eat this." And Sarvabhauma said, "But I need to have my bath first and put on clean cloth." Lord Chaitanya said, "No, don't worry about it, just eat it." And so he did. And so now that is not considered defective in bhakti. But in like Karma Kandiya, if you're trying to do some ritualistic sacrifice and you're not in the most clean and perfect condition, then it has a very direct effect on the potency of what you're doing. And Lord Chaitanya himself said in Shikshastika in the second verse that chanting of the holy names is not dependent on anything. There are no hard and fast rules. You just chant. Then, let's see. Faith. Let's just have a look here. Oh, this is an interesting point. Let's see. Faith. This is actually something which is not mentioned here so much, but it's described in Nectar of Devotion. There are five particularly important activities in devotional service. Any of you know those? Yes, that. So how does it go? Sadhu Sangha Kirtan Bhagavat Shravan Matura Vas Srimurtir Shravayasevam Sadhu Sangha Association of Devotees Nama Kirtan Chaturmurti Bhagavat Shravan Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam Matura Vas Living on Matura or a holy place where the deity is, in other words, and Srimurtir Shravayasevam, serving the deity. Deity worship. So Lord Chaitanya explains that these five, or any one, or two, or three, or whatever, that these five, or even any one, if they're performed, even without faith, but without offenses also, then they are capable of immediately bringing you to the level of bhava. So, an example of that is... Bilba Mangal Thakura. He was actually quite a degenerate. He was very, very sinful indeed. But he somehow got the inspiration to become a devotee. So he went to Vrindavan and he chanted. He did these things. And he didn't really have so much faith. He didn't know much about it. But he did it and he was not offensive. So he very quickly came to the level of bhava. Then, let's see, how about, regarding purity, another very interesting example regarding purity is the example of Vishvamitra. He performed Hatha Yoga, which is part of the mystic yoga process, for something like 40,000 years or 30,000 years or something. And then Indra became worried, so he sent one heavenly society girl. Society girl is a very nice way of saying prostitute. bring him down. So he was doing his Hatha Yoga with his eyes closed. He didn't even see her. All that happened was he heard her ankle bells jingling, and he fell down. And then he got married to her, and the whole thing developed from that. But the actual fall down came simply when he heard the ankle bells. Then after however long, he realized, wow, I fell down. So then he left home again. Then he went and did the same thing, this time underwater, thinking at least, it's going to be harder for people to get at me. But then he was doing the same thing underwater again for thousands of years, and he opened his eyes and he saw two fish mating, and he fell down again. But in bhakti, even if a person, if you look at the bottom, where are we? The bottom of page 5. Page 5. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam anandyavan sadur eva samantavya samyad vya vasatohi sa. So here, if you know this verse, chapter 9, verse 30, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's very, very bad. But as long as the devotee remains engaged in devotional service, then sadhur eva. The devotee is definitely a saint. I won't go into the whole thing, but there's a very interesting discussion by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita on this very point. That on behalf of Arjuna, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is suggesting that this is not possible. How could a person be a saint if they're doing sudur achar, abominable activity? And he even suggests things like mass murder, things which are extremely bad, not just, you know, smoking a cigarette every now and then or something, but something extremely bad. But as long as they remain a devotee, Krishna says, they must be considered saintly. Now, if you are, we just gave the example of Vishwamitra. All that happened was he heard the ankle bells and he fell down. But a devotee, even if they do something extremely bad, but at least if they remain engaged in devotional service wholeheartedly, this is not trying to give us an excuse to be nonsenses. But if they actually then try to recover their position and very sincerely absorb themselves in devotional service, then Krishna says, sadhur eva. They're definitely saintly. And you must not think of them in any other way. If you do, it's an offense. Now, if you are a karmi or a jnani, or like Vishwamitra, even a yogi, but particularly a karmi, and if you do some sudur achar, something which is extremely bad, then what happens to you? You go to hell. You go to hell. But if you're a devotee and you do sudur achar and you remain wholeheartedly engaged in devotional service, what happens to you? You're a saint. So just see that. There's hope. Yes.
In terms of accident, we call that. What is some freedom tips?
Yes. But still, if they try to recover themselves. Yeah. But if they just then go away and just become like very half-hearted devotees or quarter-hearted devotees, practically not involved, but maybe a little bit here and there, then this doesn't apply. Krishna says, Vajate Mam Ananya Bhak. Ananya means no other. Ananya, no other. As long as they remain Vajate Mam Ananya, undeviatingly engaged in devotional service, then Sarvareva. So just see what bhakti is like. It's quite astonishing. Then the last one, expertise. This is an interesting one. Actually, I got these. Anyway, this is page 5 also, but back up towards the top. There's a verse quoted, mantra hina swarato varnato va, and so on. If a mantra is either intoned or pronounced incorrectly, not only will the mantra not have effect, but it may be harmful. As when Trusta wanted to create the enemy of Indra, and by a slight mispronunciation of the words Indra Shatru in the Yajna, these words worked as a thunderbolt for Vritrasura, who was killed by Indra. So, now here, this incident with Trashta, Indra, and Vritrasura, this is in the 6th canto. How many of you have read up to the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, I'm sure a few of you have, you're just probably very humble. Anyway, there's a very elaborate story there of Chitraketu, how he gets cursed, how he becomes Vritrasura, then he fights with Indra, but then he's killed. So this yajna which is referred to here, what happened there was that Trusta, his son, was killed by Indra. It's all a bit of a long story, you can read it in the Bhagavatam. But anyway, his son was killed by Indra. So he wanted revenge. So he performed a yajna, like a strict Vedic Karmakandiya yajna, And the idea was to produce an entity from the yajna who would be able to, who would be Indra Shatru, meaning the enemy of Indra, meaning he could kill Indra, in fact. But he mispronounced. Instead of saying Indra Shatru, he said something like Indra Shatruhu, the Visarga, the doubled syllable at the end. Which means that this person who will come from the yajna will be a person whose enemy is Indra. So it was one syllable in a what was probably a vast and complex Vedic yajna, which was otherwise performed perfectly. But one syllable. And Vritrasura was produced, and he looked like he could kill Indra, but he couldn't. He almost killed Indra, but Indra was able to kill him. So, just see. But Lord Chaitanya says, with chanting the holy names, you know about class rules, any name, any time. You may be in any condition. You may not even have faith. Like that. And still there'll be so much benefit. So bhakti is so much better than karma, or jnana, or yoga. Like that. Now this doesn't mean, like you said, it doesn't mean that you can just be sloppy in your Krishna consciousness and think, well, it's such a great process, so they're just carrying me through. There are different types of japa. You know those types. Don't you? You know those types of japa? Jibba japa? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. How are you doing, Guru? Oh, what's happening today? That's jibba japa. Was that jabba jabba? Anyway, there's another one. Well, there's machine gun jabba. I probably shouldn't be demonstrating. There's radar jabba.
Things are warming up. On top of that, it's Hanuman Jayanti and various other things. What is it? Oh, it's Balaram's Rasa Yatra. Balaram's Rasa Yatra, the anniversary of Lord Balaram's Rasa Dance, which is recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. It's, what is it? Krishna's Vasant Rasa, yes. Lord Krishna performed different rasa dances. The one which is described in the 10th canto, in the Krishna books, that is Krishna's, what is it? Autumn rasa dance during Kartik, or October time, basically. But this is another one, Krishna's spring rasa dance. Then what else is it? Vamsivadhan Thakur's appearance day. Vamsivadhan Thakur is one of the close associates of Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip. He's a very interesting devotee. He is an incarnation of Krishna's flute. Would you believe? As a person. Because everything in the spiritual world is personal. Nothing is impersonal. So Krishna's flute is not just some sort of metal thing with holes in it, you know, like that, or a little stick of bamboo with holes in it. Not like that. Even though it superficially may appear like that, but actually that flute is a person. Fully, complete person, pure devotee. So that flute appeared as Vamsivadhan Thakur. And he was a close associate of Jagannath Mishra and Mother Sachi in Navadvip. And it's also the appearance day of Shamananda Pandit, who is one of the followers of the six Goswamis, basically. He and Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya, in the generation after the six Goswamis, they became the leaders of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Those three together, they were a team. They formed the first traveling Sankirtan team, traveling book distribution team. We'll tell you that story some other time. And what else is it? Something else, isn't it? Or is that it? No, we mentioned Hanuman Jayanti. But we don't worry about the jandas. That's okay. We don't need to do that. Anyway, so it's a very nice day. It's a very auspicious day. And here we all are, hearing and chanting about Krishna, so how could it be more auspicious? Okay, so now we're going to go on with our Madhurya Kadambini course. Yesterday we went through chapter 1. I'll just very briefly summarize what we discussed. We discussed that there are 9 stages in devotional service. In fact, we wrote them on the board again, because we're going to be referring to them. So we'll keep them there. So we were talking mainly, though, yesterday about a person who is not on the scale. In other words, they're not a devotee, but then they may become a devotee, and we're discussing how such a person who's not a devotee at all may become a devotee. And we discussed, or Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur discussed, a number of different options that might be considered, but then the conclusion which we came to was that a person becomes a devotee by the mercy of the Madhyam Adhikari devotees, who are of the nature of preachers. And even if a person is a Kanishta devotee or an Uttama devotee, they will generally only preach and give other people bhakti if they are accepting to some extent the mood of the Madhyam, despite them being either Uttamas or Kanishtas, generally. So, that we talked about. So a person, they receive bhakti then from such a devotee, a preacher. And we mentioned, in fact the example is going to come up in the discussion today, that when they get bhakti, it comes in a form like a seed. It's not developed, in other words. Just in a very rudimentary form, which then does develop. And as it develops, it goes through these stages. And the development is compared to the growth of a creeper. As it's getting a little bigger, it's sadhu sangha, as it's getting a little bigger again, then you can say bhajana kriya stage. A little bigger than anatha nivritti. And when it's finally fully developed and grown all the way out of the material world, penetrated through the coverings of the material world, and entered the spiritual world, and wrapped firmly around Krishna's lotus feet, that's prema. So, this was an example given by Lord Chaitanya, actually, to illustrate how bhakti develops. But the type of person we were talking about yesterday, and how they receive bhakti from a preacher, Madhyamadhikari, then they're getting bhakti, but it's in a seed stage. It's very unmanifest, and it's not like very prominent initially. But it's there. It is there. So, now, as a matter of interest, do we all have the further ongoing pages now? Or you distributed them? Oh, okay. Is anyone... They're actually, let's see, 29 pages. Does everyone have all those pages? Okay. So, anyone lacking one or any number of pages, Mrs. Pram, is it? What do you... Who is that? Somebody. What do you need? Oh, the whole thing. Mrs. Pram needs the whole thing. So anyway, okay, so they're getting it together, but we'll just continue on in the meantime. All right, so here we are. Here we are, we now have a person who has met devotees and they have received the seed of bhakti. That means they're on level number one here, Shraddha. So the seed, its presence, it's not a very prominent presence in the person. Like on a more advanced stage, the presence of bhakti is much more prominently noticeable. That they'll be very devotional, they'll always be engaged in devotional service. Or perhaps on the level of bhava, there are all sorts of very extraordinary emotional symptoms. But when bhakti is present only in that seed form, it's present, but its presence is not so much manifest. But it is a little manifest. So now how is it manifest? Well, the beginnings are that that person who was previously not a devotee will now have a little interest. Meaning when they meet a devotee again, instead of thinking nothing or like that, they'll feel, oh yes, good. This is a Hare Krishna devotee. A little attraction will be there. They may think, oh yes, I got this book, let me read it. So in these ways they may manifest a little attraction to Krishna consciousness. That I met the Hare Krishna devotees, let me go and visit the temple. Previously they weren't thinking like that because they weren't devotees. They had no real interest. But now they're thinking, oh yes, Krishna consciousness, there's something there. So this is the symptom, the initial symptom, that the seed of bhakti is within the heart. A little interest, which actually translates to mean a little faith. Because if they're thinking that, oh yes, Hare Krishna is all right, let me go visit the temple, which is a, you know, not a big thing to do, but it's better than having no interest. So if they're thinking, let me go visit the temple, if they have a little interest like that, it means they have a little faith. Because if they didn't have some faith, then why would they take the time out to go and visit the temple? They could go to the beach or watch TV or do something else. But now they're thinking, let me go visit the temple. So that interest is a manifestation of a little faith. You follow the idea? Yeah. So then, particularly when they come to that point, that they're thinking, let me go visit these people and just find out a bit more. So faith is now leading to the next stage, sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha. So basically what we're going to discuss today is about sadhu sangha and how sadhu sangha, because when they're associating with devotees and discussing and finding out more and they're attending the arati and all these different things, then their interest becomes increased. And then they may come, they'll come to the third stage, Vajna Kriya. Kriya means action. And Vajna, of course, means devotional service. So, Vajna Kriya means they come to the point of wanting to do some action to get into devotional service. So in these ways, these three stages are kind of interleading. One leads on to the next, and then the next. So it's basically Sadhu Sangha and Vajna Kriya we're going to discuss. And if we can, we'll discuss also Bhavanatha Navritti. So, let's get into it. All right. So we're going to go into chapter 2 now, page 6, and going on to page 7 and onwards, 7, 8, 9, and even on to 10. So the person now, they have the seed of bhakti, and it's manifesting in the form of a little interest. What is Krishna consciousness? Let me just see about it, let me read the book and find out about it. So then they go on to associate with devotees, and they become a little inspired in the association of devotees. So they think, let me try it. Let me try this Krishna consciousness out. Give it a try and see what happens. So, this development is described on page 7. A little bit. Top of page 7. So the seed is now growing a little, and the creeper is manifesting a little bit. And in the top paragraph, he says, as a sprouting creeper grows upwards, or as this creeper grows upwards, it unfurls two leaves. So this is a way of saying that there are two particular effects which manifest in the life of a devotee. So they are kleshagni and shubhada. Kleshagni and shubhada. So it's quite easy to understand this point. Two qualities appear. One is kleshagni, it means the distresses, problems, disturbances like that. That becomes reduced. And shubhada, auspiciousness, nice things increase. So as a person is beginning to get into devotional service, associating with devotees, and maybe trying it out a bit, trying a little chanting, taking a set of beads, like this, on this sort of level, then these effects will start. And then actually as they really get into it more seriously, then they'll develop more clearly. He does in the next paragraph talk about two types. So in other words, the person is now getting into the practice of devotional service, or sadhana bhakti. Sadhana meaning practice. Just like if you're learning to drive a motor car, you have to practice. And it's understood you won't be very good, but still you just have to practice and then gradually you learn. So this person who's getting into devotional service, bit by bit, is now practicing, learning, and becoming a little accomplished, so just in the beginning stage. So he, in the next paragraph, the second paragraph, he talks about two types of sadhana bhakti. And we're not going to really discuss them because of the whole deep discussion. But one is practice of devotional service according to rules and regulations, which is basically what we're doing, more or less. And the other is, that's called Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. The other is called Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, which is a very elevated subject. It's a practice of devotional service, but if you look round about the middle of this paragraph, he says that Raga Bhakti is in a superior position due to the presence of a spontaneous greed for the Lord. Now, why is that greed there? Because
one has some genuine affection for the Lord in a particular relationship. And then it mentions, Ye Bhana is actually Ye Shan. Aham Priya Atma Sutascha. Sutta means son. That he's appreciating, the devotee is appreciating the Lord as being his or her own son. And they have an attraction to the Lord in that type of mood, that the Lord is my son. Now, this doesn't mean that we should, or we could just imagine, maybe Krishna's my son, and let me practice devotional service as if he was. In order for that type of perception to be there, or attitude that the Lord may be my son, or my friend, or my lover, or my master, in terms of a direct personal relationship, it actually means that there has to be a perception of what one's eternal rasa is with Krishna. You can't just imagine, well, like a mother, a lady might feel that, well, what sort of relationship would I like to have with Krishna? So ladies like children. And they might think, well, let me think that Krishna's my son. And a young man might think that, let me think that Krishna's my friend and we can play. Or a young boy might think like that. So it's not a matter of imagining a relationship and then practicing, but it depends on a perception of what one's eternal relationship is. So it's a very high form of practice of devotional service. Anyway, he does discuss it here. And he says that the mood of spontaneous attraction to a relationship with the Lord produces like a stronger attraction for Krishna consciousness, and one may advance faster than if you're just following rules and regulations. But still, if you're not on that level to have some perception of your eternal relationship, then just go through the rules and regulations anyway. And then he does say, at the bottom of the same paragraph, that even though it's a fact that this Raga Bhakti or Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti is more powerful, but still, both Raga and Vaidhi Bhakti equally manifest these beneficial symptoms of kleshagni, destruction of undesirable things, and shubhada, creation of very nice qualities within oneself. Then he goes on to explain what are the kleshas, because the next paragraph down, starting with, you see the fourth line in the third paragraph says vidya, ignorance. Now does vidya mean ignorance? No. So there's a spelling mistake. You could put an A in at the beginning there. Avidya. Ignorance is avidya. Vidya means knowledge. So these five then, avidya, ignorance, asmita, to identify with the body, false ego, rag in the sense of attractions or sense gratification, dvesha, hatred, and abhinivesh, the tendency to become absorbed in bodily existence. These are the five parts of klesha, or distress, which are destroyed under the heading of kleshagni. Now, for our test, if we ever have it, I should have said that. We will require you to know these. Or because it will be an open book test, we'll require you to know where to find it. I'm sure you can do that. You'd have to be pretty silly to not be able to do that. Actually, today we're going to discuss some very, very interesting things which are very relevant to us. And this is the beginnings of it. There are five features to our entanglement, basically. We are ignorant. We identify with the body. We are attached. We hate those things which interfere with our sense gratification. And we're just absorbed in the general bodily way of life. So these are the five features of klesha. And as a person begins to make a little advancement, in other words, the seed is now growing, the creeper is coming at it, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriya, engaging in devotional activities, then these two effects will manifest. Your distresses will be reduced, and good qualities will develop, as is shown in the next paragraph. So as both types of bhakti eradicate klesha, similarly, they bestow auspiciousness. And here he gives a list of nice qualities. Disinterest in material affairs, interest in Krishna, service attitude, mercy, forgiveness. So these are the parts of Shubhada, that these nice qualities